Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh Taxi in Greece. Socrates poisoned again after 25 centuries. Discourse number 19, on the 28th of February, 1986, p.m.
It is difficult for people to understand something that they have never experienced in their life. They are all doers. But even in their life there are things which happen. For example, when they fall in love, do they do it or it happens? Can you manage love to happen? Either it happens or it does not happen. Doing has no place in it. But millions of people are not even aware that love is a happening. That's why they cannot understand that what is happening around me, I am not the doer of it. This is not a movement like other movements. Nobody is planning it. Nobody has ever planned it. I had started living out of my silence and peace, and people started coming to me and joining me. In the beginning, I was alone, a wanderer. Slowly, more and more people came. I had not called them. Something in them fell in love with me. And what had begun only with one man has become now a vast caravan covering the whole earth. Even countries where I have never been, Soviet Union, China, other communist countries, my feeling is that when you have something truthful, it has its own fragrance. It is fresh by itself. And whoever is receptive to it, whoever is in search of it, immediately gets hold of it. And just like subtle threads, people start moving towards the source of it. It seems difficult for people to understand. For example, somebody who is a communist and is trying to organize a communist party and finds it so difficult. Somebody is a socialist, somebody is a fascist. On great work and great planning is needed to do it. And here there is no work, no planning. It is a movement which can only be compared with a love affair. I do not know what is going to happen tomorrow. I do not know where I am going to be tomorrow. I have no plans for the future. This makes my people one of the most mysterious in the world. Unplanned, unorganized, yet in such tremendous love, with no rules, no regulations, with no discipline, no creed, no cult, no church, no God. Still, tempting of the heart is gluttony. There is a song that goes on spreading amongst my people. There is a dance to their ordinary activities. They are forgetting how to walk because their walk is turning into a dance. They are forgetting how to plan because they are seeing that things can happen on such a vast scale without planning. Nobody is a leader here. These people are not my disciples. They are my friends. They are my fellow travelers. We share something which is not of the mind. Which is beyond mind. A silence. A serenity, an ecstasy, a tremendous blissfulness, and an experience of eternal life. These are not theories. I am not preaching them. These are happenings which are becoming more and more actual into more and more people's lives. It will be difficult, certainly, for doers to understand it. I can say only one thing, a beautiful hiking by a great master Vasu. It explains everything, perhaps even that which cannot be explained. Vasu says in this haiku, a little poetry, only a few words, three lines, sitting silently, doing nothing, and the grass grows by itself. If you look logically, it seems absurd. But if you look at existentially, lovingly, aesthetically, with the heart of a poet, you can see immense meaning in it, sitting silently, doing nothing. That's what we mean by meditation. The grass grows by itself. Everything else happens by itself. You simply learn how to be silent and how not to do anything. And the flowers will blossom on their own, and the birds will sing on their own, and your life will become and happening. An ongoing experience, moment to moment, of tremendous joy. I never think in terms of movement, in terms of making a church, a religion, I simply go on sharing my heart to whosoever knocks on my door. And the grass goes on growing. There are 1 million sannyasins around the world, and at least 3 million people who had tremendous sympathy towards me and towards my people. If you want to know something about miracles, this is the miracle. Not walking on water. That is simply stupid. Not turning water into wine. That is criminal. The only miracle I know of is the miracle that starts happening like a wild fire is spreading from heart to heart, changing and transforming people's consciousness and bringing them to a higher level of being, creating a new man in them.
People from the outside looking at you and your friends are confused. They talk about brainwashing while you are talking about deconditioning. If the surrender of your people to you is not an escapism into a hedonistic dream, what is it then?
In the first place, there is no surrender at all. Nobody is surrendered to me. They all are surrendered to love. Just the way I am surrendered to love. They are all surrendered to higher states of consciousness. Not to me. I don't count at all. Exclude me out. So the first thing to remember that there is nothing like surrender here. That very word is ugly. It is another name of spiritual slavery. In other religions, people are surrenders. This is not a religion. And I am against all spiritual slavery. Secondly, I do not brainwash people. My work is totally different. I simply take my people beyond the mind. And the moment they experience something beyond their mind, they themselves wash their mind naturally, because it is so much cluttered with crap from thousands of years. That dirty work I don't do. They do it themselves. My work is to pull them out of their brain identity, to pull them out of their mind and to give them an experience of beyondness. And then it is up to them to keep the crap or to throw it away. And nobody wants to keep the crap. And if they want a brain completely dry, washed, what is wrong with it?
Everything should be washed and clean. Yes, nobody else should do it, because when somebody else does it, he has his own crap to replace in your brain. He deprograms you not to leave you deprogrammed. He deprograms you to reprogram you. I simply take you beyond the mind. And that is the whole method of meditation. Once you know yourself that I am not the mind, not the brain, not the body, you start dropping all conditionings which are unnecessary hindrances in your growth, unnecessary burden to carry. When you are trying to open your wings and fly to the stars, of course you would like to go lightweight. You start dropping luggage, and in that luggage, if you drop the Holy Book, the Holy Quran, the Holy Bible, I am not responsible for it. It is up to you. When you are beyond your mind, you can see that your Holy Book is 500 pages pure pornography. Now, do you want to keep it or get rid of it? when you see that your God is just a fiction, your devil is just a fiction, your heaven and hell do not exist anywhere, it happened once. A king came to a master, very haughty. Obviously, he was the king. He asked the master that I have come to inquire something. Have you to say something about heaven and hell? I want to understand. I am getting old. Soon I will be dying. Before I die, I want to be completely clear where I am going, why I am going, and if things can be changed. Does hell really exist? Does heaven really exist? The master said, you are such an idiot. Sit down first and ask like a disciple. Here you are not the king, here I am the master. And the king was furious before his courtiers. He had come with his commander-in-chief, prime minister, the queen. He calls him the idiot. Obviously, he pulled his sword out of its sheath and was going to cut the head of the master. And the master said, wait just a moment. This is where the doors of hell open. Now you can cut. Cut the head. This is where the doors of hell open. You cannot kill such a man. The master remained the same as he was, but the king changed. He could see the point that it is anger, it is hatred which opened the doors of hell. Hell is not some place somewhere. It is your psychology. It is your mind. A certain condition. He puts the sword back into the sheath, and the master said, this is where the doors of heaven open. You have understood.
No, you can go. These are not physical things, not geographical places. Just your mind. When you go beyond the mind, and only from the beyond you can see your mind exactly, how it looks, what garbage you have been gathering in it. Have you made a hell or a heaven out of your mind? It is up to you to change it or not to change it. I don't think anybody is going not to clean it completely. Clean of all rubbish. I am not brain washing anybody. Everybody is washing his own brain. And everybody has to wash his own brain. And the washing gives you such freshness, such newness, such perceptiveness, such clarity about things, about your relationships, about yourself and the world, that it is not a loss. It is immense gain. The people on the outside may be thinking that I am brainwashing people. They should come here and see that I am not brainwashing anybody. I don't wash even my own clothes. Your Chaitanya has to do it. And I have 1 million sannyasins. How can I manage to brainwash so many people? And there is no need. When you can do the job perfectly well, I simply show you the way how to get out of your mind, and then everything else is left up to you. If you are some kind of a psychological hippie and don't want to wash your brain, it is up to you. Then live in the hell, in the stinking brain that the society has given to you. So that is going to be your decision. This has nothing to do with me. There is no surrender here, there is no brainwashing here. My connection with my people is of purely love of heart and of absolute equality. I am not superior to anybody. Only inferior people pretend to be superior. Only people who are suffering from inferiority complex manage in some way to be superior so that they can forget their inferiority and they can say to the world that they are not inferior people. I don't have any inferiority complex. hence I don't need to be superior. I am simply an ordinary human being. To me, just to be ordinary is such a relief. That only idiots would like to be extraordinary, because to be extraordinary is such a tension and anxiety and worry, and continuously you have to keep your extraordinariness. It is a competitive game. Somebody else may prove more extraordinary than you. Then what are you going to do? It is a continuous nightmare. Just to be ordinary is immense relaxation and tremendous peace. No competition with anybody. No fear from anybody. Nobody can take away my ordinariness from me. The extraordinariness can be taken away. Somebody else can prove himself more extraordinary. I am absolutely non-ambitious, non-competitive. And that's my teaching to my people. That if you want to live really peacefully, joyously, each moment, paradise is possible. Just a little understanding.
In all the years, many people came to you, many have left again. You once said that if 2% of the world's population would start to meditate, this earth could be saved. Will your sannyasins and friends be enough to turn the wheel around?
People only come to me. Nobody can leave me. He can go away, but he will have to carry me in his heart. Because it is not something that can be broken. It is not a bondage that you can be free of. It is pure love you can be with me, you can be far away with me, you can start thinking that you have left me. But I have never seen a single person who has been with me has ever left me. It is impossible. because he comes through his mind, but while he is here, he starts synchronizing with my heart. He can live with his mind, but what about the synchronicity that has happened between my heart and his heart? That will remain with him wherever he goes. And that is the real thing. His being with me or not with me does not matter. And yes, I can say to you that I have enough people right now to prevent a nuclear war in the world. Nuclear war is not going to happen. In spite of stubborn and adamant people like Ronald Reagan, it is not going to happen. They are piling up nuclear weapons. We are also doing something. We are piling up more consciousness, more love, more ecstasy. These are invisible weapons. They cannot see. But I can state with absolute authority that I have enough people to prevent the nuclear war. There is not going to be any nuclear war. Man is finished with war. We are going to enter into a new era of peace. Up to now there has been never peace. History can be divided only in two periods: war and preparation for war. But peace has never existed. Nuclear weapons have proved a blessing in disguise, because they have changed the whole phenomenon of war itself. A war is meaningful if somebody wins and somebody else is defeated. It is an ego game. But nuclear weapons have destroyed the whole game. Now nobody can win and nobody can be defeated. Everybody will be destroyed. The war loses all points. If it is going to be a global society, then it is not going to happen. The politicians may continue to talk about it. They will continue to talk about it. Because their power is over people because of war. If it becomes certain that the war is impossible, then who cares about the politicians and their nuclear weapons? they will go on talking about possible war, summit meetings, new propositions, but all that is now absolutely meaningless. They are not aware that something else is happening on the side. Perhaps unconsciously they are. I have done no harm to America, and yet the whole American government became so troubled by my presence that they wanted me in some way or other, because they had no legal way to throw me out of America. They had no legal way to destroy the commune in America. They did everything illegal, everything criminal, everything against their own constitution, and destroyed a beautiful commune, an oasis in the desert, which could have proved a model for the future humanity. But perhaps deep down they became aware that what is going on here goes against their politics, their war efforts, their nuclear weapons. I am reminded of an old Jewish story. It is said in the Old Testament that God destroyed two cities, big cities, Sodom and Gomorrah, because they have become sexually perverted. Homosexuality was there, lesbianism was there, people were making love to animals, making love to animals is called sodism, because of Sodom, the city Sodom. God became so angry that he destroyed both the cities. In Judaism there is a small current of rebellious mystics called the Hasids. That is really something beautiful. Hasids can see it that it is absolutely ugly, that God should get angry, that God should be destructive and violent, that God should be incapable of changing his own people's minds. That proves absolute
impotency on the part of God. And he proves like a dictator. Hasids have created a different story which is not included in Jewish scriptures, because Hasids are thought to be rebellious people. They are. They have their own way of explaining things. They also say that these two cities became so perverted that God decided to destroy them. But one Hasid, a great mystic, lived in one of those cities. He went to God and he said, before you decide, you have to answer a few of my questions. The mystic asked, in Gomorrah there are 100,000 people, and the same is the population of Sodom. But I know that each city has 100 tremendously good people, and you are going to destroy both these cities. What about those 100 good people in each city? 200 good people who have nothing against them, they will be destroyed? Because others had been doing perverted acts. I was thinking that God is compassionate, and he will never destroy any good man. What is your answer? God said, if it is true that there are 100 good people in each city, then I am not going to destroy. 100 people are far more important. Then the whole majority of the perverted people. The mystic said, my second question is, really there are not 100 people. There are only 10 people in each city. But do you think quantity should be so important than quality? You are ready to save the city for 100 people. Are you ready to save for 10 people or not? Certainly he has raised a tremendously significant question, that even in the eyes of God, quantity is more important, not quality. God said, if it is true that 10 people in each city are good people, I will save those cities. I don't care about quantity. The real thing is quality. The mystic said, then I come to the last and the real question. There is only one good person, that is I am. Six months I live in one city and 6 months in another city. And what is your decision? And the Hasid said, God changed his decision. Gomorrah and Sodom were never destroyed. So one single man. Against 200,000 perverted people,
has certain power which is far more superior than any power. It is unfortunate that Jews don't accept the Hasid mystics. They are the cream people that Judaism has created. There is nothing in Judaism if Hasids are taken away and out of Judaism. Then it is all rubbish. Rabbis and rubbish. But the Hasids are the greatest people who have walked on the earth. Just look at this one Hasid who defeated God by simple arguments and saved 200,000 people. And his arguments are basically very fundamental. That is my argument. I am not bothering about their nuclear weapons. Let them go on piling up. Soviet Union, America, and other mad nations can also join them. I don't care about them. My concern is to create a quality of consciousness in thousands of people that existence itself would like to protect them. Existence is compassionate. And I have already got enough people no nuclear weapons can kill their spirits. No nuclear weapons can kill their love. No nuclear weapons can kill their goodness of the heart. And existence is on my side, not on the side of Ronald Reagan. There is going to be no Third World War.
Okay. What do you think about people who drop Sumner?
I loved it. Just as I had loved them always. Sannyas is just a formality. It does not matter they cannot drop me. I am going to haunt them in their nights, in their dreams, in their hearts. So dropping the sannyas does not matter. I don't pay any respect to rituals and ritualities. I know one thing, that once somebody is here with me, I make a way in his heart, of which he may be absolutely unaware. He may drop the sannyas, but I am going with him. I am spread all over of my people. They are my home. So I will love anybody who drops sannyas exactly the same as I have been loving him when he was a sannyasi. No difference at all. Love never depends on formality.
Okay. For many, this world tour looks like a new beginning. Can you comment on this new phase of your work?
It is a new beginning. It means now I have enough people in the world and I am making it impossible for nations to let me stay long enough anywhere. I want to be on the road continuously. I am a little lazy, so I need the support of the nations. To deport me, not let me stay anywhere. Naturally, I will be moving around the earth, meeting my people more, and I have my people everywhere. Even if they don't allow me in the country, I can meet my people outside the country, on the airport.
Seeing the way the media works, one gets the impression that man loves to be manipulated. Why does man want to be tutored?
Man is sick. And out of his sickness, many problems arise. Because he is sick, he would like not to be ignored. He would like to be exploited, to be cheated, to be deceived, but not ignored. He would like to be manipulated so that he can feel that people need me. There is a great need in everybody to be needed. That disappears only when your sickness disappears, when you are really enlightened, completely conscious, then there is no need to be needed. Otherwise, man would like anything. I was a professor in a university. I was sitting with the vice chancellor one day. And a girl came in, a postgraduate girl, and she complained to the vice chancellor that there is a student who is constantly harassing her, writing letters to her. It stands in the middle of the way when she comes to the university or goes to her home. The vice chancellor said, I will call him and put him right. Don't be worried. I said, wait. Before you put him right, I would like to ask few things to this girl. And then I would like to ask two things to you. He said, me? I said, yes. You just wait. First listen what transpires between me and the girl. I said to the girl, be sincere. Are you not enjoying this? She looked embarrassed, but she was really a sincere girl. She said, perhaps you are right. I'm sorry that I complained, but I'm enjoying it. The vice chancellor said, what? I said, you keep quiet. Your number is going to come. I asked the girl that just think that nobody throws pebbles at you, nobody writes letters to you, nobody writes your name on the blackboard, nobody prevents you on the way. Nobody punctures your cycle. Nobody takes any note of you. Would you be happy? I can make that arrangement. He said, no, I will not be happy because I know there are girls who are utterly miserable for the simple reason because nothing is happening in their life. Nobody takes any note of them. They are dying. I even know a girl who writes letters to herself just to show to people that somebody has written a letter to him. The vice chancellor said, what, I am listening. I said, you keep quiet. Your number has not come yet. So I asked the girl, do you want that boy to be called or not? She said, no. Then I said, be human. the understanding that boy loves you, do you love him or not? He said, I had never thought about it, but I like him. Then I said, you can go and like him a little better. So he need not do anything nasty. And be courageous. Liking is not enough. Love him. And the wise chancellor again was going to say something. I said, you keep quiet. He said, but I cannot. You are teaching students to love each other. I said, do you want me to teach them that they should hate each other? I told the girl, now you can go, because I have to talk with the vice chancellor. And when she left, I asked the vice chancellor, just remember when you were young and you were in the university, what was the situation? Have you loved any girl or not? Now you are 65. Be sincere and honest. Don't you still feel for some woman or not? He said, my God, I had never thought that I had to be interrogated by one of my professors. I said, you have to answer me, otherwise I will call the meeting of the whole university, all the professors, all the students, and you will have to answer before everybody. So just finish it before me, otherwise you will be in trouble. He said, I am already in trouble. You have sent that girl with the message to love the boy, and you don't know that boy is my boy. And now you are teaching me, corrupting the whole family. I have a wife, I have children. I did not say before the girl that the boy is my boy. And I could not say because you would not allow me to speak. I said, just remember your own young days. Just remember right now, even you are 65, love never becomes old. And don't be afraid. I'm not going to tell anybody about you. He said, it is true, love never gets old. I still feel sometimes when I see a woman that perhaps if I was not married, I would have chosen this woman. And as far as my wife is concerned, you know, she is just a kind of lifelong punishment. I console myself according to the Indian philosophy that it must be because of my bad actions in my past life that I have got this woman. Now somehow I have patiently to suffer I said you got this woman because you had not guts enough to say to your father that you want another woman with which you were in love. He said, but how you came to know? I said, I have been talking to your father also. And we are great friends. We meet every day in the morning walk. He has nothing to do. And he enjoys talking, so he was talking to me one day and he said that he has become vice chancellor but he has no guts. He was in love with a girl and still he didn't say it. And he arranged his marriage with another woman because this woman was bringing much money, diamonds, ornaments, gold, and a bungalow, a car, as dowry with her. It is not the past life actions that you are suffering. You are suffering from cowardice. And not only you are suffering from cowardice, the other woman that you had loved, she has remained unmarried just because she could not love anybody else than you. I know her too. He said, you are dangerous. You know too much about me. Just keep quiet. Be kind to me. Don't tell anything to anybody. I said, I never tell anything to anybody. But as far as public speeches are concerned, I cannot promise. I will not take your name. But I am going to say it. Man wants to be needed, to be loved, to be respected, to be attended, to be praised. A thousand desires. And when these are not fulfilled, he is ready for anything. Even manipulation will do. At least that makes him feel that he is alive. Even cheating will do. At least that feels that somebody takes note of him. It is a very strange world. When people cannot get the real thing, then they will be ready for anything as substitutes. When you cannot get love, you are ready to accept sympathy as substitute. Sympathy is not substitute. In India there is an old story. A woman, a poor woman, purchased a beautiful bangle. It was her whole life earning, a gold bangle. And she went around the town making much noise. Somebody must take note of the bangle. Somebody must ask, "Aha, what a beautiful bangle you have got. From where you got it?" Just a poor woman. And you cannot be hard on her. But nobody asked her, who takes care of beggars, poor people? People don't take even note of them. The servant passes from your room, you don't even think that somebody has passed. After the whole day's effort, she failed. She put fire in the small hut where she used to live. The whole village gathered and she was beating her heart that I am finished, my house is finished. At that woman, at that time, another woman asked, "My God, where you got this bangle, so beautiful?" And the poor woman said, "If you had asked this before, you could have saved my house." She burned the house just to catch attention. People will gather and they will sympathize, perhaps somebody will take note of her bangle. It looks strange that people should like to be oppressed, people should like to be manipulated, people should like to be cheated, deceived, but it is all human. Because they have not been receiving what they wanted, they have agreed even to these ugly things. It is a sad and tragic commentary on our society that we are not taking care of people, that we are not respectful of people, that we are not loving of people. That although there is a big crowd, the biggest that has ever been on the earth, 5 billion people, but everybody is still alone. Alone in the crowd.
Even your peaceful experiment in Oregon has been destroyed by American power. Many people who saw this happen doubt the possibility that a new man and an environment for him to go in can be created. Can you please comment?
I can understand their doubt. But I am not a pessimist. My peaceful commune in America has been destroyed by ugly fascist forces of American government, that does not mean that finally peace and love and freedom are going to be defeated. That was only a battle lost. But a battle lost does not mean that the war is ended. That was in fact the beginning of the war. The attack on the peaceful commune in America has proved two things. One, that American government is afraid of peace, is afraid of silent people, is afraid of rejoicing people. It has proved one thing absolutely, that a small commune can make the biggest power in the history of man to be so afraid . It has not been a defeat, it has been a victory. The destruction of commune does not matter, because my commune does not consist of houses and roads. My commune consists of people, consciousnesses. And it was good that the commune in America is destroyed by America. 5,000 meditators have spread all over the world. They know how the commune was created, step by step. Thousands of communes can evolve around the world. They are evolving. Hundreds of new centers are opening, because the people who have lived in a commune, who have tasted the joy of a commune, cannot live in a miserable society. They feel completely out of tune. They have to create their own small groups, which will start becoming bigger and bigger. If you see with my eyes, then I don't see the destruction of commune in America has been a defeat. America has committed suicide. Has betrayed its own fear, who opened and exposed herself. If we have thousands of communes around the world, America and Soviet Union and countries who are thinking very powerful on destructive weapons are bound to feel impotent. People of the commune have spread everywhere, and they are opening new places. they are bound. And I have become free. First, Amrita was too much interested to throw me out. Now they are worried that my movement should be stopped. I was not moving. I was simply living in that desert there. They forced me to move. And now they have become aware that this movement has been more dangerous. I was at least confined in a small place which was far away from any neighbor. 20 miles was the closest town. And we had 126 square miles around us of pure deserts and mountains and juniper trees. And we were.
And how long he can prevent me from entering America? The people of America are with me. I have never come across a single person in the whole of America who was not with me, seeing the whole thing was absolutely ugly, inhuman. How long he is going to prevent me? The court has decided only 5 years. Five years will be gone soon. I will be back in America with a greater commune, and this time the commune is not going to be in a desert. It is going to be exactly in Washington.
Women in Italy contest the fact that it is you, a man, who is giving them an equal position in the world, rather than women themselves taking what is their birthright. Can you please comment on this?
Man has enslaved women, and it was man's responsibility to give them freedom, to give them dignity and equality. I have not only tried in way to make them equal, but something more. Because they need some compensation. For centuries, man has been exploiting them. Hence, in my commune, I had put all the women in every department on the top. Not only they should be given equality for few years, they should be given something more than equality. Just to keep the balance. They have suffered so long. And my understanding is, if women take it from men, it will not be a beautiful situation. If they fight for it and take it, then men and women will always remain enemies. And that's what's happening to women's liberation movement. That movement is creating a kind of antagonism. It is reactionary. Whatever man has done to them, they would like to do to men. That will be again an ugly situation. Cannot he ever get out of ugly situations? Now the women in liberation movement are turning to lesbianism just so that they have not to love men. They hate men. This is not a situation in which humanity can grow. Lesbianism is not going to satisfy women. Neither it is going to give them equality. And they are trying in every way, forgetting completely that equality does not mean similarity. If men are smoking, then women are smoking. It was graceful of women for centuries not to smoke, because it is stupid. It has no reason behind it. Because men are using certain kind of clothes, women have to use them. They may not make them look beautiful. Perhaps they would like some hormones to be injected so they can grow beards and mustaches just to be similar to men. My effort is that men should give women respectfully, with apologies, her place. She is equal, but she is not similar. She is different, and she should remain different. Her difference is her beauty, and the difference between man and woman is their attraction. And it is the duty of men to bring women to the same status as he is, because he is responsible to reduce the dignity of women. There is no need for women's liberation movement. Just a little intelligence on man's part, and the woman can have equality and without any conflict and without any antagonism, without any bad feelings. On the contrary, men giving women back whatever belongs to them with apologies for the bad behavior of the forefathers, for which he is not responsible, but of course he is representative of all those people, will create a bridge, a loving bridge, will create more friendship. I would like men and women to be different, equal, and yet in immensely deep love and friendship.
Money is considered to be one of the greatest inventions to liberate man. And as a means, it has a good function. Don't you think that eliminating the use of money will lead to another barbarous world? What in your vision can be substituted for money in the world at large?
Money is certainly one of the greatest inventions of man, and it has helped in the past tremendously. But there is a negative side of it too. That is, money has created poverty and richness and the classes, and the classes struggle. Money has created capitalism, money has created communism. Money has helped in many ways as an exchange of things, a means of exchange, but now its function can be taken by better means, which can avoid its negative part. For example, in my perspective, instead of money as currency, every society should become a commune. We can make a limit 5,000, 10,000. If the town is bigger, then it can have 2 communes, 3 communes. But instead of family, commune takes over. The commune takes care about the children. The commune fulfills the needs of people, and the people don't have to use money. Whatever they need, the commune fulfills the need. The money can be used between one commune and another commune as a means of exchange, but not between individuals. That will destroy the distinction of the poor and the rich. And instead of currency, which is something ugly, because it goes on moving through so many hands, many of them will be sick, suffering from diseases, infecting the notes, and perhaps is one of the causes of many infections is spreading into the world. Each commune should use credit cards, and those will be used between commune to commune. And computers can manage perfectly well all the accounts. So nothing has to be exchanged really, only the computer can keep the account. And within the commune, there is no need for any money or any credit card. Whatever you need, the commune supplies you. There will be different needs. There is no harm in it. All are our people. If somebody needs cigarettes, he gets cigarettes. If somebody needs beer, he gets beer. Certainly nobody gets anything which is harmful to him or to the society. And the commune has one kitchen. For 5,000 people, he had one kitchen, which was run by 15 people. Now, it is absolutely uneconomical and absurd that thousands of women are involved in kitchens. Their whole life is nothing but kitchen and children. If they get bitchy, it is absolutely natural. Just try once in a while for 24 hours to do their work, and you will know that either you will commit suicide or you will burn the whole house and be finished with it. The kitchen is not a joke. And the children are real devils. The whole day they will sleep, and the whole night they will woke you up continuously. This is needed, that is needed. They want to go to the bathroom. They are very creative geniuses. practice, thousands of women, almost half of the humanity. It is a great loss. Only a commune can save, and there is no need that the commune kitchen should be taken care of only by women. It should be taken care of whoever is the best cook. And man has been found to be the best cook, not women. And 5,000 and 10,000 people eating together, somebody playing on the guitar, somebody dancing, somebody singing, life seems to be worth living. And commune can afford doctors to look into food, whether it is hygienic or not. They can see whether people are being fed up junk. That's what is happening around the world. Just open somebody's skull and you will find all kinds of junk inside. Ice cream, spaghetti, a communal kitchen is needed, and everything should be communal, and people are working for themselves, and whatever their commune cannot produce, they purchase from another commune, and whatever they can produce more, they change it with another commune. So there is no need for anybody to be poor. There is no need for anybody to be in scarcity. Money has lost its value. It is no more needed. It has done something good. It has also done something very bad.
A child will always be helpless. It seems to be impossible to avoid the conditioning process that starts from the day the child is born. How can this be changed?
Just I have been telling you that children should belong to the commune, not to the parents. Children with the parents have been in great trouble for centuries, because to be parents is bound to be conditioning. They belong to some religion, they belong to some church, they belong to some political party, and they go on putting their own superstitions into the heads of the children, directly or indirectly. And every child becomes conditioned. Children should belong to the commune. The parents can have them on holidays. The parents can go and live with the children in their hostel. And it will be far more loving, because 24 hours together destroys love. It is better that children should be away, and children will be more freer, and they should be in the hands of teachers who are trained in meditation, who are trained for non-conditioning the children, not putting any superstitions in the children. And there will be many teachers. In a small family, all belong to one religion, to one superstitious tradition, to one orthodoxy. So the conditioning is reinforced again and again from every side. When children are living together in a commune that has been destroyed in America, our children were living separately. Parents felt tremendously relieved of a great burden. Children felt tremendously free and happy. And our experiment in 4 years gave us great insights. Children became more mature without their parents. They were not throwing tantrums because there was nobody to listen to their tantrums. And we had made a gradation that the small children should be taken care of by the bigger ones, then the bigger ones should be taken care of by the other elderly ones. And it was such a great joy to see children taking care of other children with such love, with such understanding, which adults cannot show. And there was no conflict, no struggle, no fight for toys, because they were all together. They had their own family of children, and everybody was protective of their small children. And everybody felt responsible. And they were growing. They were far more healthier, far more intelligent, were getting mature earlier. And in our education system in the commune, we had half the day for ordinary education and half the day to do something skillful, some craft, carpentry, sculpture, or anything the children wanted. And they were getting into doing things which we cannot conceive, such small children doing carpentry or doing some other kind of craft, and they enjoyed doing more than the other part of ordinary education, because their creative intelligence was more in use. In ordinary education, only memory is used, not intelligence. So there is no problem about conditioning and children. We can create a separate section in the commune where children can have their garden, their field, farm, their hostel, where they can do their things, where teachers can be trained not to condition anybody for anything, where every kind of literature should be available for children to read. If they want, to understand something, the teachers are there to help them. But the teachers don't have any idea to impose on them. It is only a question of changing our teaching colleges and preparing teachers for teaching children without conditioning them. All this can be very easily managed.
Many people in Italy criticize the fact that you teach pure hedonism, which would not give any evolution to man, but only a daily satisfaction. Please comment.
They do not understand me. I certainly teach hedonism, but not only hedonism. I also teach spiritualism. My whole way of life is to bring a synthesis between hedonistic values and spiritual values. They are wrong in saying that I teach pure hedonism. No. I teach hedonism as a base for spiritual growth. Zorba is the base and Buddha is the ultimate flowering. Zorba is the root and Buddha is the fruits and the flowers. But tell the Italian people I'm coming there. With all my people from all over Europe. To make them understand that I am not a hedonist, that I am not only a spiritualist either, that I am both together. It is difficult to understand because it has never happened before. Up to now, man has lived in an split. Hedonists against the spiritualists. And this is the cause of the misery of humanity. And this is the cause why there has not been any evolution. Charles Darwin says that man has evolved out of the monkeys, perhaps thousands of years back. Few monkeys rebelled. They must have been great monkeys. And changed themselves into human beings. But since then, what human beings have been doing? They have not taken any quantum leap. They have simply remained human beings. Do you mean that evolution has finished? That man has come to the end of the road? It doesn't seem so. man is so miserable, in so much suffering, that this cannot be accepted at the end. And I, my own experience and authority, say to you, this is not the end. I have been a hedonist, and I have changed myself into an awakened consciousness. This can happen to every human being. Now this is the way of evolution. And my feeling about the Italians is that they are very loving and understanding people. I have thousands of sannyasins in Italy. They were the first to become sannyasins from the West. And I have found them immensely loving people, a little greasy. And I love everything about their greasiness. Just I don't like spaghetti. That has no place in my evolutionary program. Oh,